This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Tiara Vian, and here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. This is the podcast that's designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of March 23rd, 2026. The Mesa City Council took a vote Monday on whether to implement landing fees at Falcon Field, home to a variety of businesses, recreational pilots, and over a dozen flight schools. City officials say the fees are necessary to ensure airport operations, but the proposal has an ally in many nearby Mesa residents, who hope higher fees will lead to fewer flights and a reduction in flight noise. Connor Greenwall has more.
Mike Sperry lives by Summit Park, just north of the 202 in Northeast Mesa. He says the area was appealing because it was quiet, peaceful, and on the border of untouched desert. He's also got family nearby. Sperry points to a house on the same street as the park, noting his niece lives there. But the park and surrounding neighborhood are also just a few miles from Falcon Field, and directly in the flight path of planes taking off and landing at the airport.
I'll be on the phone, mm-hmm. and a plane will go over, and it's so loud I have to say, can you wait a minute until the plane passes by?
When he moved into his house 4.5 years ago, Sperry says planes overhead were few and far between. Now, though,
they're all loud, and the sound is, it's like a lawnmower, and there might be a gap of 5 minutes or 10 minutes sometimes between them, but sometimes it's a half an hour in a row, never stops.
Sperry is not the only Mesa resident concerned with airport traffic. More than 2,000 people have signed a change.org petition asking the city to do something about the noise caused by flights from Falcon Field. Since its beginnings as a training facility for Allied Nation pilots during World War II, Falcon Field has remained a prominent training airport and is now home to over a dozen flight schools. And pilot training requires students to repeat touch-and-goes, a maneuver in aviation where the plane lands on a runway and takes off again without stopping. Sometimes that'll happen multiple times during one flight lesson. Those flights bothered Sperry so much he raised the issue with the Federal Aviation Administration. In 1 week this January, the FAA tracked more than 2,200 flights passing over Sperry's house at an altitude lower than 900 feet.
Especially the pilot training pilots that are in the planes going around, they don't just go over once. One plane circled our house 30 times. One plane. So that's one operation, but 30 times.
Residents like Sperry have been closely following the City Council's upcoming decision on implementing landing fees. Emails to council members show a wave of support for the fees from residents who view the charges as a fix to the noise caused by planes over their neighborhoods. But Casey Blake, a spokesperson for the city, says the proposed fees have nothing to do with reducing flight noise. Since 2006, Falcon Field operations have relied on funds from a sale of airport-owned land. But the funds will soon dry up, and rather than rely on Mesa taxpayer dollars to keep Falcon Field afloat, city officials instead have proposed landing fees and other service charges at the airport to keep Falcon Field self-sustaining. What piqued the interest of concerned residents like Sperry are projections, prepared by city staff, that higher fees will result in a reduction of flight traffic at Falcon Field. In a statement, Blake said it's reasonable to estimate that some pilots will stop flying there, or at least fly there less often. But Rick Ryle, who founded Desert Wings Flight School in 2025, warns the fees may not reduce flight traffic as much as residents hope.
You know, we have 2 single-engine and 1 multi-engine aircraft. So, you know, if this pushes us out of business, it's not going to have any impact.
Ryle says landing fees and other charges will most impact small flight schools like his. Of all the flight schools operating at Falcon Field, Ryle estimates that only a handful of the largest schools, businesses that can afford to absorb the fees, are responsible for upwards of 80% of flight traffic.
How much traffic that we're putting into Falcon, it's negligible compared to, you know, again, a handful of the large ones.
As for pilots like Dakota Rice, an instructor at Falcon Field who also flies there recreationally in his free time, he says the fees would spell the end to his personal flights in Mesa.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to land at an airport with a landing fee. Yeah. I don't want to get charged if I don't need to. Yeah.
Rice says he's concerned the landing fees will force flight traffic to airports without air traffic controllers, increasing congestion and the risk of mid-air collisions. As for residents complaining about flights, Rice says people who buy a house near an airport should expect noise.
Personally, it seems silly to me to be upset if you were to purchase a house by train tracks, if you were to get upset that there's loud trains passing by every day, you know, it's the same idea, in my opinion.
The Mesa City Council has scheduled a vote on the proposed fees this evening. Connor Greenwald, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In business news, the EPA issued fuel waivers across the nation on Wednesday that could temporarily lower gas prices in Arizona, Cameron Sanchez reports.
The fuel waivers allow states to use a fuel blend that is typically restricted during the summer because of concerns it exacerbates smog. The EPA waivers will go into effect on May 1st and last for 2 weeks, but they could be extended. As for how much they will affect fuel prices, it's not clear, but the waivers are expected to bring gas prices down slightly. Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs requested a fuel waiver on March 18th, citing the war in Iran as a cause of rising gas prices across the country. Cameron Sanchez, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Thanks for listening.
Rio Salado College is hosting a community conversation on the future of affordable housing. Join industry leaders, innovators, and local voices to explore new ideas shaping housing in our region. The event is Thursday, April 30th. Learn more at riosalado.edu/futurehousing.
In politics news, Phoenix leaders have approved wiping the name of Cesar Chavez from city property after a bombshell report on sexual misconduct by the late labor icon. Matthew Casey reports.
Farm Workers Day is now the name of the upcoming city holiday that was originally created to honor Chavez's birthday. His name will also be removed from street signs, a plaza that's home to city council chambers, and more. Here's Councilwoman Betty Guardado.
Cesar Chavez might have been the face of the farm worker movement and of a movement that a lot of us followed for a very long time, but the movement made him. He didn't make the movement.
The New York Times recently reported that Chavez sexually assaulted underage girls and raped fellow organizer Dolores Huerta. In the 1970s, Huerta coined the catchphrase, si se puede, while in Phoenix to fight a state law against organizing farm workers. Matthew Casey, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In education news, the Tolleson Union High School District is breaking ground Friday on a new 90,000-square-foot training and learning center. As Bridget Dowd reports from the Education Desk, the facility will house a family resource center.
The training and learning center will be located along 99th Avenue, just north of Camelback Road, and is expected to be completed by next spring. The first floor will be a resource center where families can be connected with social services. Superintendent Jeremy Kaya says the building will also house the district's distance learning academy.
Those teachers have been teaching out of these portable buildings that should have been demoed many years ago. We're going to finally get them a more permanent structure and more suitable environment for providing online instruction.
The project has a $65 million price tag that's being paid for by a bond. The groundbreaking comes just 2 weeks after the district started construction on its new high school in Avondale. Bridget Dowd, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In Fronteras news, the DOJ is adding a terrorism charge to an indictment of an Arizona gun dealer accused of selling firearms to cartels. From the Fronteras desk in Hermosillo, Nina Kravinsky has more.
The original indictment accuses Southern Arizona resident Lawrence Gray of attempting to provide firearms to the Jalisco New Generation Cartel and the Sinaloa Cartel. The Trump administration designated both groups as foreign terrorist organizations last year. That designation opens the possibility for new terrorism-related charges for people in the U.S. accused of aiding those groups. The superseding indictment against Gray now adds the charge of attempted material support to a terrorist organization. The DOJ says Gray is a resident of Hereford, Arizona, about 20 miles west of Bisbee, and owned Grips by Larry, a federally licensed firearms dealer. Nina Kravinsky, KJZZ News, Hermosillo.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. And finally, from KJZZ's original production, The Show, something different. It's a tiny desert concert.
Today we're featuring a local duo called Snailmate. Their music sort of defies characterization. Here in the office, we're going with synth pop rap. In the video we shot with them, which you can find on our YouTube channel, they're performing at a UFO memorabilia museum in Scottsdale next to a statue of an alien. The bandmates, synth player and lyricist Caitlin Lander and drummer Bentley Monet, formed the group about 10 years ago. They sat down with me for an interview to accompany their performance.
When we started, I was just a a rapper and a producer. I've made beats, been making beats for 20 years now, and writing songs that way by myself. But when we started, Bentley made it very clear that he would not just be drumming to tracks for me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I was basically like, you have to learn an instrument if you want to be in a band with me. Because he was like, hey, your band's breaking up, my band's breaking up. Let's start a band. And I was like, well, you have to play something.
What was important to you about that, about having someone else at, you know, like actually playing an instrument?
I just really like how the dynamic of a live show goes and how it can be faster or slower and there's actual energy to it. And it's really important to me to have that energy and connection with somebody when you're playing. I like when you can change up the song. Not that we really do that ever, but like there's been a few shows where we make things longer or shorter or right. something, and it's nice if one of us makes a mistake. If it's live, we can catch each other up and fix it. And if there's a track, the track is going to keep going. It's so unforgiving. Like if you mess up and the track doesn't,
uh-huh.
like it's just going to keep going and it's going to be a big disaster. So it's nice
yeah.
when there's like the live element and there are going to be mistakes, you can meet each other and fix it. And so basically I was like, put down the video games and pick up the synth. Or I mean, whatever. I didn't tell him to play synths. I was like, pick an instrument.
When we started, I actually played a little bit of bass guitar on a couple songs, but it's not my forte, and I was finding it a little bit limiting.
Uh-huh.
So what's beautiful about synthesizers, you can make all sorts of sounds. You can do bass tones. You can do really harsh things. You can do melodic, pretty sounds.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, this is going to give us the most bang for our buck.
Sure, sure.
And I can approach it like a video game, and I still kind of do, where it's pattern, remembering patterns and like, you know, things on there. I don't have any music theory background.
Sure. I have to ask, because video games have come up a couple times now. What's the video game thing? Are you the video game person?
No.
Are you guys both video game people?
Not me. Bentley, not me.
Bentley,
I hate video games.
Yeah. And they're a huge influence of mine ever since I was a little kid. You know, the music and video games and the approach to it.
What are some formative games for you?
Sonic the Hedgehog growing up.
Yeah.
The music of those games with its kind of like New Jack Swing, really percussive beats and kind of funky bass lines and weird synths. They had a little 16-bit Yamaha chip that they had to make all of their music on. And
uh-huh.
so they found different ways to just tweak these two or three oscillators to make a snare and a kick and hi-hats and synthesizers and bass lines and all this stuff and approximations of guitar and with a very limited, you know, palette.
Bentley, I have to ask, what do you dislike about video games? Because you said, like, I can't stand them. I don't like them.
Yeah, what's your problem, bro?
I just don't like... to me, it's just...
Fun.
I like... No.
He doesn't like fun.
I like being... No, to me, fun is being productive.
Yeah.
And working. I love working.
Uh-huh.
I love booking tours.
Uh-huh.
I love practicing, like... Uh-huh. I love band practice and stuff like that. And
yeah.
if I'm not being productive, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So, like, to me, that's not a productive outlet.
Kaylin's saying that like the music of video games was a source of early inspiration. What for you fills that space?
Well, when I was younger, I mean, I'd play video games when I was younger,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And I discovered like punk music and stuff through Tony Hawk games. But that was like when I was in like middle school, and then I kind of gave up on the video game stuff. That turned me on to MTV because I was right at the cusp of when there was still music on MTV.
Yeah.
So I really grew up waking up and turning on that and watching all the new music videos.
Yeah.
And I've always loved music videos. I think it is mm-hmm. so cool that
mm-hmm.
people have like a story to the song, and it's not always like what you would think it would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a great segue for me to one of the things I'm really excited to talk to you both about, which is in the vein of the story not being what you would expect it to be. One of the things I enjoy the most about your guys' music is it's hip-hop lyrics. And I know I haven't listened to the full catalog, but at least in some cases, like you have the song My Gross Disgusting Body.
My Weird Gross Body.
My Weird Gross Body. I'm sorry.
No worries.
That's close. That works.
Speaking broadly, so much of hip-hop, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, is about puffing oneself up.
Absolutely.
Is about... aggressive forms, particularly of masculinity, is about expressing ego, about how awesome you are,
money,
how skilled you are.
Skills, braggadocio.
Yes, it's about bragging. It's about real kind of like self-mythology. Your guys' lyrics are often about the idea that, like, I am pathetic. I don't like myself. I'm having so much trouble existing.
It's like the inverse.
Yes.
Kind of, yeah.
Talk to me about, like, expressing that idea and using hip-hop to do it.
I think it goes back, and I've written songs, you know, about how dope of a lyricist I am, you know, and how I've got these sick skills and how I can, you know, land chicks or whatever. And they just – they're not fun and they don't feel genuine. Then they're not. And a lot of hip-hop is not genuine. And but it goes back to the reason I got into hip-hop, writing hip-hop, is because I had these beats and I had these song ideas, but I could never sing. And I always – and it's like, how do I make a song that's interesting using my, at this time, especially very limited range and skill set? And it's like, okay, I got to find other ways to use my voice. And so I know that what I was going through and what I still go through about my own feelings about myself are not unique to me.
Right.
And so if that can help people, but also just that's just what I am – I guess it's another form of self-obsession.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
sure,
whether
sure.
It's the mythologizing or just, you know, talking through it. But yeah, it just kind of came natural.
That's a very interesting idea that it's still self-obsession. It's still mythologizing.
Yeah.
It's just, as you said earlier, it's kind of the inverse of the energy that you get in other hip-hop songs.
Yeah.
Well, this seems like a very opportune moment to hear one of the songs we've been talking about.
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us?
This is a song called Trash, Baby, and it's about imposter syndrome and feeling like everything you make sucks. So I guess it's very appropriate.
My therapist said I have that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mine too.
Would you like a little advice from someone who's tried? Maybe don't just delight it, being one of a kind. I'm ghost and rotten on the inside, like I'd love to vomit all the time all over myself. And then the hot step, you beat the love all up in hell. I think I'm awesome, still I think I'm awesome. Ain't no greater obstacle than myself. I get 'em, I take a moment, love 'em. Then I love 'em in the trash, baby. I don't know why I'm like that. I make it, I'll give it hugs and kisses. Yes, baby, I'm out of my mind sometimes. What was I talking about? Oh yeah, it's even different pill through the brain. Coming back to tell you how to rage with the game. It's easy, give yourself a dollar every time you complain. Punch your own face when you start to feel great. Then you learn to vomit all the time all over yourself. You hot step, you beat your front up in hell. This shit is awesome. Always get a mouthful and your impossible never melts. I get 'em. I take a moment, love 'em. Then I love 'em in the trash, baby. I know you notice me ahead on a spike. How would you like a little advice of someone? Oh!
Bentley, talk to me about your connection to the subject matter of the songs. You do contribute vocals on the songs as well.
Yes, it makes me. It started out as a joke. I would start screaming at practice, like literally as a joke, and then he's like, no, you have to do that on the songs. And I was like, oh, that's going to be hard to do. But yeah, I relate to all that. I like, well, it's funny because I don't think Kaylin really listens any like sad or like emo music, and I do. That's my jam. So this is like a good mix of it's sad enough, but still funny and like whatever. But
interesting.
I can relate to any of that sad stuff. That's all I like is like emo music and not necessarily the genre emo, but just like sad songs and weird
Yeah.
And depressing. I can't stand sad songs.
Yeah. Which is why he makes
sad songs are your video games.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's why he makes the sad lyrics funny, I think, is because he doesn't like sad songs. And I do. So it's relatable to me. Yeah. But yeah, the lyric thing literally started as a joke. It was not, I don't think I was ever going to do any lyrics.
Vocals.
Or vocals in the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's hard to think of, write a song without it. And, I'm like, okay, I'm going to write this part for Bentley, and it's obviously opened up a lot what we can do live, and because otherwise it can be very, one note.
Yeah, he'll make me learn the song on the drums and then I'll get it down. And then he's like, okay, now I need you to scream here and sing here and do this. And I was like, oh, now I have to relearn the whole song because drumming and doing vocals is not easy.
Yeah. So. How do you think of Snail Mate as a project? Do you think of it as a purely musical project, or is it more than that for you?
No, to me personally, it's like a lifestyle for sure, because it's an energy. It's a collective in my head. Like, all of our fans know any of our shows are like a safe space to come to. And like, the videos are dark and creepy, but I wouldn't say our shows are dark and creepy. I think there's like different elements as far as like the music videos go. It's like the songs are online. Anyone can interpret them the way they want. The music videos we have are mostly more on the dark side. I think I've died in like three of them.
Yeah.
Or four. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah, they're all completely different. And then our live show, I feel like, is like, we're funny and fun and we're going to go crazy and all have a good time together. So yeah. I think there's...
With songs about, being depressed and hating yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's have you guys play one more song to take us home. What are you going to close on?
This is a good song that has to do with what you're talking about. This is The Laziest Man in the World.
That's this guy.
Yeah. It's a song about how I don't like doing all the things that Bentley loves to do. I'd like to do nothing. Maybe play some video games. So here's that.
We're Snail Mate, and this is The Laziest Man in the World.
Lazy.
Or maybe in this case, the universe.
Lazy.
Laziest man in the world.
Lazy.
He's the laziest man.
Lazy.
He's the laziest man.
Lazy.
The laziest man.
Laziest man in the world.
Behold the laziest man in the world. Damn, I'm a pearl. Countless bed sores adorn my soul. Check it, you see my corpse walking around. It's a hoax in my head. I'm at home. Domes tell them I liquefied bones.
And this has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by the Katina Foundation and Basis Charter Schools, Palo Verde Generating Station, SRP, and the Virginia G. Piper Charitable Trust. Thank you for listening and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vian. This is KJZZ. Listen more, learn more online and on the KJZZ mobile app.